You're listening to The Point. We're talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, there's been some ongoing enhancements to the South Terminal. And for listeners not familiar with the South Terminal, can you describe what it is and its importance to the city?
Well, so the South Terminal is a marine terminal. It's a dock, loosely speaking, that is being built in the southern part of New Bedford's harbor. And it is the first purpose-built marine terminal for offshore wind development in the United States. And I know many of your listeners are familiar with the offshore wind industry as a result of by virtue of the Cape Wind project. And so New Bedford will be staging the Cape Wind project next year, and that seems to be moving forward. And I know that, and I get, frankly, some of the objections that have been voiced by our friends on the Cape, whether it's as a result of the change in view sheds or utility costs. From New Bedford's perspective, offshore wind presents a once-in-a-generation opportunity to rebuild our economic base. Offshore wind is the offshore wind industry is coming to the United States. It's been maturing in Europe for a little over 20 years now. I took a trade delegation last April to Northern Europe. It took about 32 folks, local officials, state officials, as well as members of the regional business community to take a look firsthand at some of the ports that have been developed to support this industry, in particular places like Bremerhaven and Cuxhaven, Germany. These are two old industrial ports, one a little bit smaller than New Bedford, one a little bit bigger, that have enjoyed a resurgence as a result of all the capital that has been poured into the places by this industry. Both cities, Bremerhaven and Cuxhaven, have in the last 10 years had unemployment rates that exceeded 25%. Mm, yeah. They're down to about 10 or 11% now as a result of all this investment. So you go to these places and you see tremendous activity. You see factories by the water where foundations are being built, where welders are welding, and you see engineers working, and you see crane operators, and you see all these jobs that have materialized very quickly. And it's inspiring to us, and we see much of that happening in New Bedford potentially in the years to come. The reason is New Bedford has certain key advantages for the industry. Well, one is we've had this deep water port, and we've have a seafaring workforce. And we have we've got all the right port infrastructure. Most of all, though, we're close to the wind. The Cape Wind project is the first project that is closer to shore, as we all know. But the wind farms in the pipeline in the years to come will be further out at sea. So beyond the horizon, people on land are not going to be able to see them. But they will be much larger. 25% of the nation's wind reserves lie just south of Martha's Vineyard. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most consistently windy places on the planet. If you ask anybody in Chilmark how windy it gets, get windy down there.
So how many jobs are we talking about? Do we have an idea of what kind of a job force we're looking at?
Well, it's hard to know with precision, but we look at places, say, like Bremerhaven, which has, is still building out. But they have added approximately 5,000 direct jobs and thousands more indirect jobs. The people working in sandwich shops
the
hotel, brand new hotel. They have a brand new gleaming 25-story hotel right on their waterfront that has been built as a result of all this this capital infusion. Many of the jobs, so there are lots of jobs in associated with the assembly. On the docks of windmills, but they're also most of the jobs are in two places. One is in operations and maintenance, and so the facility that Cape Wind is working on here and Woods Hole is going to be the center for operations and maintenance for the Cape Wind project. It's very close, and that's going to create a lot of jobs here on the Cape, and that's a good thing. Many of the jobs are also in the supply chain. And the what's interesting about the supply chain, the component supply chain for offshore wind, is that because the components are so big, You can't readily transport them on land. You can't put a 900-ton foundation, which is just a gigantic steel pipe, on the back of a truck and move it somewhere. It has to be made in port. It has to, and that's what's happened in Europe. These factories have set up right on the port, the side of the port, and these big components, nacelles that are 300 tons, the blades now, and many of the newer models of offshore windmills are a football field long. They are made right in port, and they're rolled out to a yard where they're stored until they're ready for deployment. Then they just move right to the water and put on a barge and sent out. So that's how it works. So the advantage New Bedford has is it's got this land on the water, and this manufacturing will be done
right there. All right, Jane is giving us a call from McQuaid. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Indy. Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to compliment you. New Bedford has such a wonderful waterfront, and so many valuable things are there. And I know you don't get credit for them because they've been there for a long time, but at least you're continuing them. But I wanted to ask you if there's anything that the city of New Bedford can do to help Falmouth out, encouraging ferry service to the Vineyard. We would love to see people bypass, not have to come this far and reach the island from New Bedford.
So you're looking to send business our way? Is that is that it? Well, we're game for that.
I just didn't know whether New Bedford can promote this, because the Vineyarders don't mind all the traffic they cause in the narrow streets that leads to Woods Hole, and I just hope maybe you could be.
Well, so we have had some conversations with elected officials from the Vineyard, from two of the towns on the Vineyard, about freight service, and that's something that we'll continue to explore if we can have trucks shipping goods from New Bedford straight to the islands instead of having them drive down the narrow streets of Woods Hole. I think that would be a win-win for everybody. But that's something. There are a lot of pieces that will have to fall into place in order for that to happen. But believe me, we'd love to see more folks take the ferry from New Bedford straight to Vineyard Haven and Oak Bluffs, and we will continue to promote it. You can do your part and tell folks that when they come down here to Woods Hole, that next time they should come out of New Bedford. We're happy to take the pressure off.
Thanks for the call, Jane. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeendislands.org. So cutting back to this area of renewable energy projects like Cape Wind, there are other energy projects that you're also renewable energy projects and city property and things you're working on. Tell us about some of those.
Very, very much so. At the top of the broadcast, there was a piece about renewable energy incentives at the state level and what that might cost ratepayers. And there's a system in place now in the state that incentivizes cities in particular, municipalities in particular, to take advantage of those incentives and encourage solar projects on city municipally owned property. We have been more aggressive than any municipality in the state. So of the 351 communities in the state, we get the most power from renewables. And we're on a track now to derive about 3/4 of our electricity needs, the city of New Bedford, the government, all its operations, about 3/4 of our electricity from renewables in the next few years, which will put us among cities of our size, the greenest of any city east of the Mississippi. We do it for two reasons. One is it saves taxpayers money in the long run. We stand to save over the next 20 years roughly $35 million, so it's a hefty sum. Secondly, it's good for the environment. You know, this is climate change mitigation strategy that we are working on at the local level, as such things must take place at the local level. And third, it really helps our brand. Yeah. You know, we've talked about how New Bedford's image is changing in the wider world, and part of that that change is about a very real story of how progressive we are, about how forward-thinking we are, how proactive we are in taking on big challenges, sometimes challenges that are more national in nature but have to be dealt with at the local level, and renewable energy efforts are certainly part of that narrative.
Right. Of course, for years we've been talking about bringing rail service to New Bedford, connecting the city with Boston. So what are your thoughts on how rail service would benefit the region? And there's a lot of people think it would, but I've also heard some people a little bit concerned about that, and that it might not be as good for some of the lower income residents because they feel like housing prices would go up and there may be some other increases in cost of living. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, I think I'm not too concerned about an uptick in the cost of living as a result of the South Coast rails being constructed. I think it would be marginal in the short term, and if it were greater in the long term, I think folks could adjust to it. But I'm all for South Coast Rail. I think it would grow jobs in the region, permanent jobs. You know, the projections by the Mass Department of Transportation are that it would create approximately 4,000 new permanent jobs. It would generate an additional $500 million in new economic activity in Greater New Bedford, which is substantial. Mm-hmm. Look, it's taken a long time. You know, we've been disappointed over the years that it hasn't gotten the support it has. We think it's deserved. There is a big price tag associated with it, and I think that's what causes folks in Boston to gulp. I'd say a couple of things. First, there's one problem that we have to work through, and that is with our, especially folks who are running for governor now, and that's the perception that all that matters to Greater New Bedford is South Coast Rail. We have statewide candidates. We've had statewide candidates come down to New Bedford election after election after election, and they follow a certain playbook, which is to, you know, to stand in the middle of New Bedford and genuflect in the general direction of South Coast Rail. And they figured, well, that's all you have to say when you're in New Bedford. Well, there's a lot more. We've discussed some of these things. There's a need for, and I could point any one of these candidates to $1 billion worth of capital needs in our harbor. We're growing the footprint of educational institutions such as Bristol Community College and UMass Dartmouth and New Bedford proper. There are needs there. There are opportunities there. And there are a number of other state capital investments that are very worthwhile in the city. And so, you know, as much as we want South Coast Rail to move forward, there are other things that we need to be talking about and make sure that they're heard at the state level. The other thing I'd say is this. Eastern Massachusetts although Massachusetts in general is not one of the more rapidly growing states in the country. The reality is that Boston is becoming more congested. Boston has a very hot housing market, and demand for space is growing, and people are getting displaced from Boston. What I think will happen inevitably is that the Boston economy will need greater access to public transportation in the years to come, and it will be in Boston's interest that South Coast Rail be built. And when that happens, when there is an overriding need to get employees to employers in Boston, then we'll see it built. But by the time that happens, it'll be a lot more expensive. So it really is for folks in Boston a choice between paying a lot now or paying a really an awful lot later on.
Yeah. So you think it will happen eventually?
I think it's inevitable. Just because, look, if you've ever sat in traffic driving from, especially the South, right? So from the Cape or Greater New Bedford into Boston, and there are some folks who commute. My wife does it. My wife's an oncologist at Dana-Farber. She sits in traffic every day.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. Eventually, and it's not becoming better, it's becoming worse,
Absolutely.
Notwithstanding the Central Artery Project. So eventually, Boston is going to have a tougher time competing in the labor market because people are just going to say, you know what, I've had it. I can't do that commute anymore. And so the state is going to have to make some hard choices about about spending on public transportation, and it's not that far away.
In your inaugural address, you identified absentee landlords as a problem in the city. Explain how this was affecting the city and what you've done to address the problem.
So the problem with absentee landlords in New Bedford is not unique to New Bedford. Many urban areas in the state face similar problems. We've been more aggressive in dealing with it directly, but so the situation's this. We've had, in the last few years, we've had many properties, traditional tenement housing in places where textile mills once stood, bought up by landlords who live not in New Bedford but far away. And I don't mean to sound entirely parochial about it, but there is value, a lot of value to neighborhoods and to families of having local ownership. Owner occupied housing in particular, but as a result of the foreclosure crisis that grew out of the 2008 financial crisis, we've had a lot of displacement. There have been many foreclosures in the city of New Bedford, and there have been some, I don't want to mince words, very predatory landlords who have swooped in, bought up those properties. Pull the cash out through refinancing with certain banks, and have rolled that cash into other purchases of foreclosed properties. So that at this point we have three or four landlords in the city that own in excess of 50 tenement houses. They together own probably close to about 2,000 units, and they have consistently failed to take care of those properties as they would their own. Mm-hmm. So they invest the bare minimum in refurbishing the properties to comply with code. They do not carefully screen tenants, and so they have recruited in folks from other cities who've been crowded out. And so we have a problem with increasing dependency in the city, and it's not New Bedford is one of the most welcoming places you'd ever find. We have a very we have had a history of welcoming folks from other places and of tolerance and of really an egalitarian spirit since our Whaling days. But we have, in many respects, a problem with a growing underclass of folks who are coming to New Bedford not for a job, not for economic opportunity, but just to put a roof over their head. So it's a problem it's a thorny problem that we're trying to deal with most directly by better code enforcement, to force landlords to take better care of their property. It's working, but it's not nearly enough. And it's, there are greater market forces at work. You have a very hot housing market again in Boston, in New York as well, and folks are getting displaced. And those two cities aren't building affordable housing as quickly as they should. And so the folks who are getting crowded out end up in places like New Bedford. There are other cities that I think are faring worse than us in that respect. But, it's very difficult for a city whose tax base has contracted over the years to take on, more folks who have, a broad array of needs.
Right. We are talking with New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break.